Right, this is the Cool Shit Podcast. Each week we round up the latest cool shit, helping us think different and keep inspired. What makes it in, what gets left out, and what gets challenged. Is it cool, is it shit?
Or does it cross the magic threshold and come bona fide, certified cool shit?
Welcome to the editors meeting.
Well, well, well. Welcome to the Cool Shit Podcast, episode 42. And you might have noticed that this is my voice and not Gina's. Because Gina, she's skiving her own podcast now. Yeah, and that's Chris, your line manager, tutting there.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think he's been a line manager for about 6 months, but...
Okay, fair enough, but it, you know, it suited my narrative a little bit more.
But he is pissed off, that part was true.
I'm the elder.
Yeah, he's the elder, and he's hurt. Yeah,
I do hope she's okay though, because she's been in Italy. If we rewind the clock 3 years, you know, some scary shit was happening
in Italy.
Yeah,
COVID
outbreak.
Chris, what are you doing? So Gina's now patient zero of some pandemic.
Anyway, I'm here, so relax. We have some exciting guests. Actually, is this actually the year anniversary?
Yeah, this is it's about a year, I think. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is. I mean, not to the day, but to the week, yeah.
Amazing. So this podcast has now been going a year. We did try to get the original lineup, but Matt was busy, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay, so instead, we have our esteemed colleague, Pabs, the Pabulator, Pablova. How are you doing?
Just vibing. Very excited to be a replacement today.
Yeah, you sound
so excited. And yes, one of the OGs. Ooh, Chris, how you going?
I'm good, my man. I'm very good. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. And here from the start, James, how are you?
I'm all right. I think I might be starting to get a cold. It keeps coming and going. So
you got a touch of the Gina's,
have
you?
I'm open. Yeah. Oh, God, she's giving it to me. But yeah, I'm good.
Okay, so James, who is the chief editor of the Cool Shit newsletter, a.k.a. The Little Chief. How have the stories been on the year anniversary? Not so good, I think.
Yeah, it's a bit hit and miss. Not great. The problem is the world doesn't know that it's the year's anniversary. So this is the problem. We've spoken about this like, in the past. We say, like, oh, let's do some sort of special edition. But you're kind of at the mercy of the forces beyond your control. But there's some stuff in there, isn't there?
Okay, all right. Well, let's move on to that first story. Let's hear it.
Right, are we all familiar with the film franchise Scream?
Indeed,
yes.
I am.
Yes.
Yeah, scary. Right, so there's a new one coming out, and I know that because their promo has gone fairly viral, and it's done so basically through terrifying civilians. So the character Ghostface, who I'm led to believe isn't a very nice fellow, has been spotted a lot of times across the US, and there's a load of like these images that you can see of his ghostly figure just staring at like CCTV cameras. And now Scream, the film, have basically claimed this by setting up an official Twitter for Ghostface and just tweeting out, "I'm watching you."
So off the bat, I guess the first question is this like, was it called clown facing or clowning?
But yeah. there was the clown thing like 4 years ago, but that was actually just people who were mental, wasn't it?
That was people that dressing was actually, up as clowns, yeah, scaring the shit out of people. I mean, that's my question. Is this a film promo? Is this being created by the marketing?
This is from Paramount. This is official. But
so they've actually slapped their name on this?
Yeah, yeah, they've claimed it now. I'm fairly certain of that. The reason I'm fairly certain is because they did a similar... This is why I'm not sure what I think of this. Probably would have been around Halloween, actually. They had another horror film called Smile. I don't know if anyone's seen it, but it's like got a big fucking scary smiley face in it. And they had a load of people kind of turn up to like news reports or like baseball games and stand in the back of like the shot smiling for like 5 hours.
Even better than that, they had the actors from the film do it.
Oh, it was the actual actors,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, no,
yeah.
Exactly.
And like they'd stand, there was, I think it was some of the actors and some just punters. Yeah. And like some they'd stand there like smiling as wide as they could for like 3 hours non-stop.
And the placement on it was great because they were getting on sort of primetime sports shows. They
It was like baseball. It might have been like the World Series. It was like they were basically finding all of the events that would have a load of eyeballs on it. And then it's kind of using Twitter as well, because then people are going to see something weird. And the first thing you do when you see something weird and inexplicable is you go to Twitter, because other people will have said, "What the fuck is this? Has anyone seen this?" And then someone will come up with a theory, someone will come up with another theory. And that's kind of how it spreads naturally.
Pablo,
That's are me. You a horror film? Yeah, I don't know. I feel like you could be. I feel like you could be a big horror film fan. Are you?
I'm a small horror film fan. They're all right.
Yeah.
Cool marketing campaign, though.
Okay.
I think I watched maybe like half of the first Scream film. It seemed okay.
That was Pablo, ladies and gentlemen.
Jesus Christ.
Chris.
That's half a review of the first Scream film, which you might have seen.
No, I am a real pussy when it comes to horror films. My only experience of this Scream character has been in Scary Movie, in that franchise.
Yeah, so Scary Movie was a comedy franchise which leaned heavily into ripping off Scream. That was the case, wasn't it?
Yeah. I actually think I had a Scream mask when I was doing trick-or-treating, and I'd have like a little sack that you could pump fake blood that would drip down. It's pretty cool.
Oh, I don't really like horror. It's not really my thing.
Wait, you squeeze your sack and blood comes out?
No, not my own sack. It was an external sack. It wasn't connected to me. I just had the control. But, you know, this Ghostface thing's a bit weird, because what if purging starts and everyone's in Ghostface masks?
I think that would be a win for their marketing department if more and more people came out in Ghostface masks.
As long as no one gets fucking killed.
You know, is this going to start some weird craze?
Like the clown thing, because the reason this has gone kind of semi-viral is because, well, in the article it says that like kind of concerned citizens are like reporting the spottings to the police. I'm not sure if I buy that, or if that's just what Paramount have kind of seeded as the story, like, oh, we're bad. Which is what I think that's probably what they were going for. And I'd imagine these images were probably slightly more... Maybe I'm being too cynical, but I think they're probably slightly more controlled. It's like, okay, we've got this CCTV camera there. Let's get out. Let's just get the shot.
I agree with you. I mean, like, thinking from a logistical standpoint, it's a really good campaign to do, because it's quite easy. It doesn't have to be the same person playing
it. Mask, yeah.
So you could literally send out three people to different corners of America where all of these photos and CCTVs have been taken, and just place someone there. I think it's creepy. I think it's good Twitter value and all the rest of it. But I'm just totally with you about it's already been done, and it's been done better by Smile.
But it's been done by them as well, which is what makes it even worse, because they're not even like, it's not even copying someone else. It's just doing this. It's using the same idea again. Yeah. I understand it's slightly different, but like, I'd say this actually isn't as good for kind of the reasons that you said. What makes it good in a way is also what makes it shit, because it's so easy. At least with the Smile one, you're like, oh, fair play, they're literally standing there for hours on end. That deserves some admiration.
If you capture that sort of Smile campaign, it's really demented. It's just a normal person doing a really, really creepy, demented smile. So I kind of feel it's more effective. And also just the heritage, I guess, of Scream. It's a Wes Craven film. Famously, he made Nightmare on Elm Street. He then sort of came back in sort of 1996 and made the first Scream, which was a completely meta film. At the time, it had a real understanding of media. It was, you know, about kids that understood what horror movies were about and who would die, and it told a story through a meta angle. And I think that sort of fast forwarding, it's got new directors. I think paying homage to the territory of understanding media, they could have done a little bit better on it.
Mm. Yeah, it feels a little bit lazy. And also, do you say this is Scream 6?
It's a Scream 6.
Are people not coming up with any new stuff, right? And this will lead on to the next story, because I'm starting the next story with a trivial question about a franchise. But like, I saw something about like every award-winning film this year was like part of like a franchise, or it was like a remake or a sequel or something. Like, there's very few kind of new ideas there are new ideas, but studios aren't making them because they can bank on this has made money in the past, it'll make money again now.
Bankability.
So that's weirdly like it's kind of a golden era for cinema, for the people making money out of it, but a bit of a dark age from a sort of artistic point of view.
Yeah, so indie cinema has sort of like died. Like, if you go back to the noughties, it was like a real renaissance moment for really good sort of indie storytelling. Personally, I don't really mind. Like, cinemas, like, it's just diversified in terms of we don't all go to the cinema anymore. So they're just banking on those big sort of blockbuster movies, or like a big jump scare movie. And I think TV's come more interesting. And I think eventually it will come back into fashion, that will have better storytelling back in the cinema. I don't know, but at the moment we are going through a bit of a boring franchise stage.
Can I play devil's advocate for a second?
Oh, no, you can't. Let's move on. Of course you can.
Right, next story. I feel like it makes sense that franchises are the ones that are going to be making the more money. because people know them. If you look at like the Oscar lineup for this year, like there's actually not that many franchises. It's mostly independent films.
Wait, so you and James are giving conflicting information here.
So it might have been like the top 10 highest grossing that are all like remakes or franchises. And now there's a new like Indiana Jones coming out with a 97-year-old Harrison Ford in it.
Don't get me wrong. I think it's a bit sad, but it also makes sense that the films that are going to make the most amount of money are the films that people are kind of already aware of and can trust
right,
that they're going to enjoy.
Pablo.
Who's paying you to say this? No, I agree. I'm not kind of offering a value judgment of whether it's good or bad or right or wrong. It's just the state of affairs, and you find the films that are now in a cinema, as you said, have kind of been, it seems, homogenized a little bit.
But I think, again, just thinking about those Oscars films, there's still that space for a auteur blockbuster. I'm thinking Christopher Nolan. What's the movie he's got coming up?
Oppenheimer.
Yeah. Those films are still being made, but they're gradually being made by probably the same people. It seems to be Christopher Nolan's the only person that's packing out cinemas with
his name is on the big ones, right?
Yeah, exactly.
To be fair, the Banshees of Inisherin was one which I suppose is the complete opposite of what we're describing, and was one of the most kind of popular and awarded films of last year,
though, isn't it? It's like a fan base for a director will get you into the cinema. Yeah. Now I know that's a harder thing to do because less directors are breaking through in cinemas, and you know, Christopher Nolan, Quentin Tarantino, these are people from an era before that are now making cinema here. So I guess that's the problem.
It's clout. It's another form of clout.
Yeah, exactly. But Pablo loves it, don't you?
No, I love it.
Fucking loves Ant-Man. Yeah. And the Wasp, both of them. All right, well, as already mentioned, I'm going to start this next story with some trivia. I'm going to ask you a question, and whoever gets it right will win a prize.
Oh, go on.
I don't know what, but you'll win a prize. Can anyone tell me how many Ice Age films there have been?
Ooh.
I'd say six.
Right, are we talking the franchise?
I think he is. Not films about the Ice Age.
Or films about the Ice Age.
Do I have to answer that?
I don't know. I'm going to say three.
I feel like a solid three. Yeah, I feel like a solid three.
You're going to do the same number as Chris.
I think it's a good answer.
Pablo is wide open for you.
Oh, hello, Mr. Franchise.
I said six already.
Six? You got it right.
Six.
Yeah, and actually...
He is a franchise
big fan.
There's been six feature lengths, seven short films, two television specials, three video games, an animated series, and a play. To be fair, I only remember like three, I think, but they were pretty good. Anyway, this actually hasn't got much to do with the story. We're not just talking about Ice Age. So there's a bunch of scientists for whom clearly six plus all the plays and video games wasn't enough, as there's a biotech company called Colossal who this week announced their intention to reincarnate the woolly mammoth.
I find this scary. You should find this scary.
Don't even ask my opinion. I should leave the room.
So they are bringing back the woolly mammoth. Now my head explodes at this story. Like, number one, is this... How are they doing it? How are they doing that?
I'm glad you asked, Gareth. So basically, the woolly mammoth is like a 99.6% DNA match for the Asian elephant. I don't know what exactly that means, because that sounds like it's basically exactly the same, but I swear we're about 90% the same as a banana, so it's hard to really say. But so using gene editing from an Asian elephant, they're going to be able to create basically a woolly mammoth embryo, which can then be implanted into the Asian elephant, because it's like the closest relation.
Understanding that woolly mammoths went extinct because of climate change and that there wasn't enough cold land for them to roam. If anything, it's worse now than when they were goners. No?
Don't know. But no, apparently there was some reasoning behind it that it was meant to kind of fight back against climate change.
Well, the woolly mammoths.
Yeah.
No, I'm up for that. A woolly mammoth climate activism march.
Okay, well, if you fools would shut the fuck up for a moment, I will explain. It's because the migration patterns of the mammoth will supposedly help improve the Arctic's ecosystem back to what it previously was.
But you have to ask yourself why they went extinct in the first place. And it seems like things are more likely to go extinct today with more human effect on the landscape in terms of pollution, in terms of the size of the Arctic, which is decreasing each year. Having said that, I think a lot of people will be opposed to this story because it's unnatural. And I have this problem when people say things are unnatural. This is just part of our evolution. It's fucking natural because we can do it.
Exactly, because it's happening. It therefore is natural. Yeah. I have the same thing about the handball rule in football where they say, oh, it's handball if your arm's in an unnatural position. Unless it's intentional, it's not unnatural because it Your arm naturally went there, so I'm with you on that. Fuck you, Dermot Gallagher.
But I don't know if what we're going to do. We're just going to let them roam free, are we? Is that? Are we going to?
No, they're going to reintroduce them into Siberia.
Yeah, roaming free, I guess.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
It seems like they want them to follow specific migration patterns, though. So, like, how are they going to manage that? What do they do that?
Come here, Willy. I'll be honest, I don't know the full science behind this. But what's also weird, they say that they think they'll be able to do this within 4 years as well.
Yeah, it does seem to me like a little bit off.
But you're saying, like, they'd be more likely to go extinct. Just do it again, then. Just get some more. Get a dodo while we're there, fella.
But where does this lead to? I mean, does this mean that, like, pretty soon we'll be able to bring Neanderthals back?
Well, this is the question, isn't it? Because if they can do it with a woolly mammoth, then you think you can do it with kind of anything else. And this does feel like sort of the start of Jurassic Park, which is another film franchise that I think has had 8 films. So,
I mean, didn't they clone a sheep a few years ago?
They did clone
about
sheep.
30 years ago. Yeah. Dolly, yeah.
Dolly the sheep. That was yeah. like, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
what happened with that?
And she lived a happy life, yeah. It went badly. I don't know.
Look, they're extinct. Just let them be.
Leave it. Leave it alone.
Leave it alone.
What are you going to get out of it? Like some nice...
You get a woolly mammoth.
Woolly mammoth, like fur coat.
Okay,
some,
but come on, like...
Some is extinct.
We're not bringing them back to kill them. Go hunting. I mean, that would be some crazy Westworld shit if that's, you know, how it ended up. But yeah. I guess the interesting thing about this story is actually, will it actually happen? Because...
It sounds like bollocks, doesn't it?
I feel like I've been hearing this for my whole life.
What?
What, they're bringing back woolly mammoths?
Yes.
Every corner I turn, I hear the words woolly mammoth following me, haunting me for the last 23 years.
Come on, every once in a while someone says, oh yeah, we got the DNA, we're doing it, and it hasn't happened yet. So.
I love the way that's how scientists talk in your head.
Yeah. Yo, what's up? We got the DNA, we're doing this one. I was like, I'm walking here.
I mean, so the money that they're putting into this, what is it, like 60 to $75 million?
That's the thing. That's why this isn't just some, well, it might just be some crackpots, but they've managed to get someone to give them $60 million. So clearly some people take it $60 million worth seriously.
Yeah, well-funded,
like,
crackpots.
Is that money not better invested into an ecosystem where animals are already going extinct?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. That's a really, really good, valid point there. We've got things that are actually going extinct.
Like giant pandas, rhinoceroses.
Yeah, exactly. Like, just bolster them. Like, if we can do that, like, start producing them.
Things have gone...
I want to work in the panda factory.
Things have gone extinct long before there was kind of any, like, human influence. For that $60 million, if you get this technology right, then you can prevent things from ever going extinct again because you just keep bringing them back. So I say sacrifice the pandas for the greater good.
Pablo.
That's my name.
Have you brought a story for this week?
Yeah, I got a story, guys. It's got to do with the Olympics and it's got to do with esports.
Okay.
They're having a baby.
Oh, ooh. Ooh. After that woolly mammoth story, yeah. I don't know where this is going.
I didn't like that.
So basically, the International Olympic Committee has announced this past week that they're launching the Olympic Esports Week. It's happening in June in Singapore. And the esports community is not very happy about this because they've chosen an array of games that people are quite unsatisfied with, mostly because most of them are kind of unknown and completely...
There's like mobile games that you'd buy, like some sort of bullshit Candy Crush.
Yeah. They've done archery, tennis, racing, dance, chess, cycling, taekwondo, sailing, and baseball.
And this is to represent the Olympics, is it?
So it's basically the same committee, the International Olympic Committee, have set up a new competition, say, where the governing bodies that oversee each individual traditional sport collaborate with game developers to, like, bring this competition to life. So it's kind of associated, it's the same people behind it, but it's not part of the Olympics.
It's associated in the same way like the Paralympics and the Olympics are associated,
precisely,
surely.
Yeah.
But like, they're not going towards the same medal count, or like the Winter Olympics. It's just another one of those, basically.
So they're creating games from scratch. They're not going to be like regurgitating games like SSX and like Mortal Kombat. Like,
no. So the games already exist. It's just they're collaborating, the developers, with the Olympics people.
But it feels a little bullshitty to me. Like, the Olympic Committee shouldn't be choosing games. Like, their thing is the Olympics, right?
Right.
You should have gamers choosing which games get played,
well,
right?
But that's the tricky thing, because what's interesting, because normally with like a sport, you don't have someone who makes that sport, whereas with games, like, there's companies who are there to make money behind each game that has to develop it.
You'd feel like the Olympic Committee is made up of people that have, you know, a wealth of experience and heritage and work in the Olympic Games.
But this just screams like it would, to me, it just feels like it would be impossible for this not to become corrupt, because surely the games developers are just going to be sweet-talking the Olympics committees to try to get their games
in. And also, presumably, there's again, going back to bankability, would it not be that you have some bankable gamers out there that you'd be like, well, if this gamer is going to be in it, like, surely that would influence the games that you choose, because you want some of the best gamers in the world playing, so...
Yeah, you think so. They've gone a really weird... Like, I saw one of the games, it's like, it was made, like, a month ago, and it currently has 150 downloads, and it's like an archery tic-tac-toe game.
This feels like there's been bombs going on left, right, and centre.
Okay, I'm going to go Jimmy Conspiracies for a moment.
Go on.
You know how, like, kind of the traditional athletes in sports, like, kind of try to, like, denigrate, like, esports? Do you think they've just tried to, like, the worst version of this possible to, like... So all the naysayers will look at it and go, tic-tac-toe fucking archery, what the fuck is this? I want to see people fencing properly. Like, maybe this is actually a clever way of marketing the actual Olympics.
I mean, it would be quite the conspiracy. I like it. Are you a gamer, Pablo?
I am a gamer, yes.
And do you ever tune into streams?
I used to, yeah. I used to watch Counter-Strike professional players.
So would you tune into, forget the game for a second, would you tune into like an esports Olympics?
As a concept, sure. But obviously the way they've done it here, it's a little bit less enticing. I understand why they've done it the way they've done it, though.
Well, okay, why?
Because the Olympics, it's all about peace through sport, right? Bringing people together. And a lot of these massive esport games like Dota and Counter-Strike and League of Legends, they're inherently, quote-unquote, violent games, one way or another. So I can see why they would want to distance themselves from that and why their sponsors even might not want to be associated with that. There are, like, a couple exceptions to that that don't quite make sense to me. Like, there exist games that have esport communities around them that are related to sports, like FIFA, that's NBA 2K, even Rocket League. It's football with cars. It's not quite football, but like it's kind of associated, and it's not a violent thing. And they haven't even taken those into consideration. They've gone this completely niche and random route, which, yeah, is probably ready to be fraudulent. But I see the logic behind it. I just feel like they've missed a big mark.
I suppose one of the things about the Olympics, which is quite fun, is that you end up watching a random sport, particularly the Winter Olympics, actually, curling and such, where you're like, what the fuck? I didn't even know this existed. I didn't know there was a community around it, but you kind of get into it because it's the Olympics. Perhaps they've taken some of that into it, but I do think they should have just done more Olympic sports in there, right? Skateboarding, like, was a big thing at the last Olympics. Is there a skating game in there, for instance?
Oh, imagine like the Tony Hawk's.
Yeah, exactly. Like that'd something like, right?
I think it could become cool because, I mean, we're definitely seeing more esports like popping up. Like, there's definitely a demand for it and definitely a market for not only gamers and for consumers and for viewers, but doesn't seem like they've really carved it out entirely yet, so I'm not really on board with it.
It's one of those ones you've got to just kind of watch and see, but from the outside it does look like it's just going to fall on its arse with such big games out there already being played.
That's what I'm saying. With this being like the first one, it feels like you could do quite a lot of harm to it by fucking it up,
especially
in terms of reputation.
Big as it is, it being the Olympics, right?
Tell you what, this kind of feels like the fun uncle trying to sort of like elbow their way into the stuff that the kids are doing sort of thing, and it just feels like quite a shit version of it. Final word, Gareth, are esports players athletes?
Oh, those little nerds, are they athletes? I think the thing is, from the outside, clearly they're not. They sit down all day and they're good with their thumbs, right? Mm. Like their fingers
and
their
thumbs. Same argument as a darts player, right?
Who also definitely aren't athletes.
Not physical athletes.
Well, I know, but like an athlete, like intrinsic in the name is a physicality, right? Sure. There's a physicality to being an athlete. However, if I was one of those nerds, I definitely would be like, yes, I'm an athlete. Please
can I buy you a drink, darling? I'm an athlete.
You know, in many countries, they do have athlete visas. Also, one of the games is Just Dance, which means that you do move around a little bit.
Society is doomed.
Okay, speaking of society being doomed, you always like a doom story. Have you got something to cheer us up, or are you going doom and gloomy?
I do usually have a doom story, but no, I'm keeping it on the topic of ice.
That wasn't like a theme we set.
So, Hublot just got a new brand ambassador, Daniel Arsham. For those who don't know him, he's an artist. He makes some pretty cool like bronze sculptures, like cars, Pokemon, humans, kind of reimagines them with eroded elements. To launch his first piece, Light and Time, they've basically done a big installation on the Swiss Alps, And it's basically a ginormous sundial. The centre of the obelisk is about 20 metres high, and it's made with, like, the mountain's natural materials.
It looks pretty stunning, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, right? I don't know if anything like this has been done before. I mean, a sundial on the Alps, I'm sure it has, but it's the first I've seen one this good anyway.
Do you remember a couple of years ago, I think it was during lockdown, I don't know if it's the same artist, but
mirrors, like monolith mirrors, just started popping up.
Oh, the big obelisk.
Yeah, there was one in like Utah.
Different countries as well,
yeah,
right?
Exactly, yeah, exactly.
I don't know if those were those ever actually claimed by anyone?
I don't know, but that was great. That was a great moment.
That was good. That was in cool shit. Yeah.
Oh, what's that film?
2001
A Space Odyssey.
Yeah, exactly. It felt like that. Right? Yeah, totally. Yeah. This looks kind of cool. I kind of like this. It tells the time, obviously.
So it's linked to the brand. Like how a sundial would work. You know, as the sun moves, obviously the shadow cast from the obelisk will move, telling you what time it is. Although on here, you can't really see any numbers.
Yeah, you can count to 12.
I don't think the numbers are necessary. I mean, for a dyslexic like me, maybe I do need to go, that's a 12, that's a 3, that's a 6.
But you're a fan of the ancients, aren't you? So there's something, there is something beautiful here about, like, this was the ancient way in which they told time.
Yeah, I don't think they're doing it because it's the most practical way to find out what time it is, to scale the Matterhorn. And I go, there's no numbers, what a waste of time.
To find out the time. It's just pretty cool.
It's literally quite cool, which is sort of the point of cool shit. Like, the reason I like it is because it's weirdly, considering what it is, it's kind of understated in a way, even though it's an enormous installation. Like, it feels like he's been allowed to keep his, I guess, artistic integrity and just do something because he thought it would look cool, rather than Hublot trying to kind of slap a load of logos and
stuff.
Well,
I wonder who, I wonder who brought it to him and whether they said, look, we'd like you to do something, and this was his response, or they said, we want you to build a big fucking sundial, will you do it? I don't know. Hopefully the artist led them, right? And this was the artist that wanted to bring this to life, as opposed to
imagine so, because the actual sundial that we're looking at kind of emulates one of their like famous watches.
All right.
So if you see like the icy like clock bezels, so that represents like the screws in one of their, I think it's like their Big Bang piece or something. But yeah, no, it's just a cool piece of work, right?
I tell you the other reason I like it is because I'm pretty sure that exact background, that's what Toblerone have had to take off of their packaging this week.
Ah, yes.
You seen that?
Because they've moved to another story.
Yeah, another story. This is a little bonus one. And I'm going off the dome here. I believe they've moved their, I guess, manufacturing from Switzerland to Slovakia. So they've had to get rid of the Matterhorn, like, in the background of the Toblerone.
Oh, that's a key piece of branding. And isn't that why they're triangles? I've always assumed that, like, mountains, like a mountain. Triangles, like...
Pretty much, yeah. Whereas now, I don't know what they're changing it to, but they've been told, you got to shift that.
That is iconic, the Toblerone, like, mountain.
And to be fair, I'm saying...
And you've got, like, the hidden bear and the... in the logo, but
I don't really see why they've got to get rid of it, to be honest.
No, nor do I.
Supposedly there's a specific kind of Swissness rule about the designs. So they're gonna have to change it to a generic mountain peak.
So just to clear things up, under Swiss law, only milk-based products entirely produced in Switzerland can use national symbols in their marketing.
Okay, there we go. Yeah, Swiss law is always a little bit more tricky than sort of like plain European law, right?
They're not very tight on extraditing or banking or embezzling, but do not use our mountain on your chocolate.
Where can people find the newsletter?
zachagency.com/cool-sht, which we still need to change.
Guys, thank you very much for coming. Pablo, thank you. Chris, a year's worth of podcasts. You are a stalwart of the pod. James, see you later.
Oh, bye.